What's up, everyone? I want to tell you about a car that you are going to love. Check it out. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, I love that, available dual wireless charging pads ensure that you can take on any adventure. So let's say you're ready to take the family on a camping trip or something like that. The Santa Fe is perfect for you. You've got all-wheel drive. You can load everyone up in the third row. It's time to start being adventurous, and you need the right car, and that's the Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
This is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
On his way to the end zone.
I tell you what, that was a spectacular play.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
What a play! Off to the races! Touchdown! Oh, he's done it again!
Now here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, Heath, and Ben.
A random hodgepodge of fantasy football chatter today on Fantasy Football Today. Welcome to the show. I don't know, not my best intro, but that's no surprise. Adam Azer with Chris Towers and Heath Cummings today. We'll try to get to some dynasty. We will get to dynasty tiers at running back and wide receiver later on in the show. But what are we going to talk about today? Derrick Henry rushed for 2,000 yards last year. What does that mean for the following season? We will look at history, the other seven running backs that rushed for 2,000 yards. DeAndre Hopkins touchdowns, the amount of plays that the Chargers are going to run, pro football focus, offensive line grades, all going to be discussed today. Chris, what are you most looking forward to discussing out of this random selection of topics?
The etymology of the phrase hodgepodge. Is it a food? Is it just like a collection of foods, or was it a specific food type at some point?
Well, we will we'll have plenty of time because Adam has been desperately searching for things to talk about to push back the dynasty content, so we don't have to talk about that. I think it was a food.
Hodgepodge? It was a food, or it was related to, you know, a bunch of different types of foods?
Hodgepodge soup is a type of mutton soup.
There you go.
All right, mystery solved. That is it for today's show. Thank you. Okay. Just some quick news and notes. Jordan Reed retired. Alex Smith retired. Pittsburgh extended Mike Tomlin's contract. 3 years. 3-year deal. Seattle defensive end Aldon Smith talked about how they signed him yesterday. They signed him over the weekend, I believe. He's now being accused of second-degree battery. And the Dolphins, we're going to talk about their offensive line. It was one of the five worst run-blocking offensive lines, according to Pro Football Focus. Last year, they signed DJ Fluker. He could compete for a starting spot at guard. He could be a backup tackle. Dolphins are also reportedly interested or considering trading the sixth pick in the NFL draft. Let me just tell you.
The Oxford English Dictionary definition is a dish made of a mixture of various kinds of meat, vegetables, etc., stewed together, especially in Scottish, hodgepodge.
That does sound like a hodgepodge of ingredients.
Yeah. This is really interesting and not something we'll be able to talk about once the NFL draft comes. We've got a week and a half now to just talk about whatever the heck we want to talk about, basically.
I started panicking last night because I thought that the draft was coming up this weekend.
No.
And I was like, nobody's told me what we're doing.
I don't even know what we're doing, Ben. Are we doing a show right after Thursday night?
And Friday night and Saturday afternoon.
Okay, good. Perfect, perfect. That's what we did last year. We'll have instant reaction for you Thursday night, Friday night, and Saturday. We might air the episodes at 3 a.m. Eastern time, so be on the lookout for that. We'll see. Okay, the Pick 6 podcast. In addition to this podcast, you want some NFL draft coverage, go to the Pick 6 podcast. Everything you need to know ahead of the NFL draft. This week, they're breaking down Ryan Wilson's mock draft 10.0 and releasing 5 positional rankings episodes. Let's talk about Derrick Henry and his 2,000-yard season. He is the 8th running back to rush for 2,000 yards. The previous 7, none of them reached 1,500 yards. The most for any running back the following year was Barry Sanders with 1,491. It looks like the second most was Chris Johnson, 1,364. Of the 7 running backs, I believe 3 or 4. four of them. I'll double check. Missed time. Four of them. Four missed some games the following season. Only two of them missed more than two games. So I don't know that injury is a huge concern there. But what about this? The inefficiency. Eric Dickerson went from 5.6 yards per carry in his 2K season to 4.2. Adrian Peterson, 6.0 to 4.5. Jamal Lewis, 5.3 to 4.3. Barry Sanders, 6.1 to 4.3. Barry Sanders had the lowest yards per carry of his career in the year after his 2,000-yard season, which, by the way, that year after, it was his final year before he retired. Terrell Davis, 5.1 yards per carry to 3.1 yards per carry, only four games. I don't know, he had like 60 carries or something like that. Injury-marred season. Chris Johnson, 5.6 yards per carry to 4.3. O.J. Simpson, 6.0 to 4.2, a huge drop in yards per carry. So does that concern you guys at all for Derrick Henry? He's probably, you know, he's got a good chance to get to 1,500 considering there's 17 games, but, you know, I don't know what this precedent means. Every single one of those running backs lost at least 1 yard per carry. Most of them were 1.3 or more. Heath, does that mean anything to you as we evaluate Derrick Henry and his 378 carries?
I really thought we've got Killjoy Chris on the program. I don't have to do this. Chris is going to do this for me, so I will do it. Yes, Adam. Generally, if you have an historically good season, your next season is going to be worse. You will most likely regress more towards your career norms, and running backs do get hurt a lot. So it might not be surprising that guys don't play 16 games 2 years in a row very often. And if you reach 2,000 yards, you probably do play 16 games. At the same time, I had Henry projected at 5 yards per carry. He was at 5.4 last year. If I dropped him to 4.4 to fit in with the theme of losing at least 1 yard per carry, like every running back ever has, that would drop him three spots in the PPR rankings.
And 5.4 yards per carry would be pretty low on the list of what these guys averaged when they had their 2,000-yard season. So perhaps that means he won't lose as much as the other guys.
And I would say especially, and this would be a difficult, I'm not asking you to do this, but he was only 0.4 yards better than his career mark.
Yeah, I have some context in that. Like Eric Dickerson, like I said, he went 5.6 to 4.2 the following year. That was the lowest mark of his first six seasons of his career. Adrian Peterson went to 4.5 yards per carry. I don't know where that measures up. But Barry Sanders, like I said, tied for the lowest mark of his career, 4.3 yards per carry the year after. Terrell Davis had a terrible year. Chris Johnson was never really the same after the 2,000-yard season. Yet he still managed almost 1,400 rushing yards. Just got a lot of work. And yeah, O.J. Simpson, 4.2 yards per carry the year after his great year, his best year. That was pretty much what he averaged in his first four seasons. So it was a kind of a mixed bag of like regressing to what they usually were at, and some of them just had pretty bad years for them in terms of efficiency. Anyway, I just thought it was interesting.
I do also have him projected for 37 fewer carries, even though he's projected for 17 games and only played 16 last year. The only thing I don't know, because I do think it would be smarter for Tennessee to try to keep him a little bit fresher, except that every year he runs for 250 yards in week 17. So I don't think he's getting worn down by the volume. He's just destroying people late in the year. And their margin for error is so, so slim with the way they're playing, with a bad defense and a run heavy attack and extreme efficiency, that two things. One, it could go terribly wrong and they could just be a bad offense 1 year. It wouldn't be that surprising, and that would hurt Henry. But the other thing is they can barely afford to take him off the field.
Yeah. Chris, what do you think about this phenomenon of following up a 2,000-yard season with a significantly worse year, but obviously from quite a high?
Yeah, I think the thing that you kind of have to keep in mind with any kind of discussion like this is, like, if you rush for 2,000 yards, there's a high likelihood that you had, let's say, an inordinately high number of really long plays. Or, you know, Chris Johnson's big season was that kind of thing where, yes, he was great, but he also had, you know, a handful of really long plays. Derrick Henry had a 94-yard touchdown last season. That was 5% of his yards, roughly. He probably won't rush for another 90-yard touchdown next season, although he did that in 2017 or 2018 too. I don't know. This is Derrick Henry is different. Like, that is the thing that people always say about Derrick Henry when you're trying to, like, well, historically, people haven't, running backs haven't been able to do the things he does, but he's different. And guys who are different tend to be different right up until the point that they are no longer different, whether it's because of injuries, whether it's because of age, whether it's because just regular old statistical regression to the mean. That's going to happen to Derrick Henry at some point. It happens to everybody. It happened to, you know, Barry Sanders, like you mentioned, you know, all these guys who are some of the best running backs of all time. If you look at wide receivers, the five highest single season wide receiving marks of all time, every single one of them went down by at least 450 yards the next season. On average, they went down by about 27 yards per game. They still average 90 yards per game the next season, though. Mm-hmm. I think Derrick Henry will almost certainly regress in fairly significant ways, but, you know, I still have him as the number three RB in non-PPR and number nine in PPR. So it's not like I'm projecting him to regress to being bad. I still have him projected for 1,600 rushing yards in the 17 game season.
I do think that that usage is so huge, because I was writing Nick Chubb's outlook today, and I always, like, I love Nick Chubb and I think he's awesome, and I always hate where I have him projected. And Chris and I have talked about this. And like, you look at somebody like Derrick Henry, I don't know that Derrick Henry is definitely a lot better than Nick Chubb. But Derrick Henry averaged 23.6 carries per game last year. Nick Chubb didn't have a game with 23 carries. Like, yeah. His usage and the way they lean on him in the running game makes up for a little bit of the passing game work. Now, in theory, it's going to cause him to break down or get injured at some point, but
yeah, I just find it amazing that Derrick Henry had 2,000 yards and 17 touchdowns. And on a per-game basis, if you count Christian McCaffrey, who only played three games, but I think we all agree he would have averaged more fantasy points per game than Derrick Henry. He was fourth in PPR. Full PPR, he was fourth. He was behind McCaffrey, Kamara, and Cook. And he was three full fantasy points behind Cook, four behind Kamara, and eight or nine behind McCaffrey. So how much better can it get for Derrick Henry?
It can't.
It can't.
No.
Right. And that's why he scares me a little bit in PPR. Unless,
yeah.
have we even brought up maybe he catches more passes? We're, you know, we've moved AJ Brown up because they lost Jonnu Smith and Corey Davis. Could we get to 30, 35 catch? I don't think so. It just doesn't seem like it's part of their game. But could we? What do you guys think about that possibility of Derrick Henry picking up some of that passing game slack?
I think it's possible. I mean, he had 31 targets last season, which was a career high. He caught 19 of them and had his worst efficiency season, but the sample size is really small. I think the problem is, I don't know how much you can increase Derrick Henry's role in the passing game in like a defined way that really helps your passing game. Like, I think it's like, we can add a screen or two here every week, but you're not going to use him like James White. Like, no. You're not going to like have him running curls out of the backfield or anything like that. So I don't know how much more of a role he could have in the passing game in a way that would help the Titans offense. But like you said, they might not have a choice. It might be a situation where, you know, Ryan Tannehill has fewer options, so he has to dump the ball to Derrick Henry a couple more times.
Okay, to finish it off, Chris, you said you had him third in non and ninth in PPR?
Yeah.
And Heath, what about you?
Yeah, third in non, I believe, is right. In PPR, I think I've got him fifth or sixth.
Okay. All right, let's talk about Movement Watches. MVMT. Join the movement. Get 15% off today with free shipping and free returns if you go to Movement MVMT. .com. So not movement, but MVMT.com/FFT. Why should you have to pay, you know, $500 for a nice watch? I have two Movement watches. That's how much I like the first one. I got a second one. Both of them were a fraction of that cost, just as nice as anything that you're going to see in department stores. I get compliments all the time when I wear my Movement watch. Movement is now one of the fastest growing watch brands. They're shipping to over 160 countries across the globe. That's why you have to join the Movement, people. And now it's not just watches. They got a lot of stuff on their website. Again, MVMT.com/FFT. but they've expanded into blue light glasses that protect your eyes from your screens. They've got minimalist jewelry, more style essentials that don't break the bank. They're all designed out of their California headquarters. Keeps things very inexpensive, and that helps the consumer, right? And I have the glasses as well, by the way. I use them as sunglasses in my car. I use them when I'm on my laptop at night. I didn't realize how annoying the light from the laptop is until I started wearing these glasses. So that is a great, great product. As far as the watch goes, you know, I do get compliments all the time. I really do. People don't know me. They don't expect me to have some fancy watch. And they see the watch. They're like, whoa, that's really nice. Yeah. And it wasn't expensive at all. And it's really, really nice. It's a great watch, both of them. So you're going to go to mvmt.com/FFT and shop around. And the hardest part is deciding which one you want. There are a lot of watches that you're going to want. But if you want to elevate your look with style that doesn't break the bank, then join the movement and get 15% off today with free shipping and free returns at mvmt.com/FFT. mvmt.com/FFT. Okay, let's go to our Pro Football Focus offensive line rankings. The five worst run-blocking lines and the five worst pass-blocking lines, and a little bit about what they've done this offseason to address it. Chris, I'm going to start with you. Let's go to the worst run-blocking lines. The worst one, the Chargers. Last year, they had Trey Turner. They had Brian Bulaga. They were busts for them. Bulaga only played 10 games. They have signed Corey Linsley, really big addition at center, and Matt Filer from Pittsburgh, which was the second worst run-blocking offensive line last year. So the Chargers, the Steelers, and now they've got three of their starters from last year gone, the Steelers. The Dolphins, as I mentioned, they signed DJ Fluker. They were starting two or three rookies at one point last year. The Cowboys, we know their story. And the Broncos were the fifth worst run-blocking offensive line. But if you read, I was reading about the Broncos offensive line this morning, and one of the like Bronco fan pages said, hey, we've got the best offensive line in the AFC West. They actually might be right. They're getting Juwan James back at right tackle. Garrett Bowles had a great year at left tackle. The interior, not as good as the tackles, and that's why they're one of the worst. They were one of the worst run-blocking units. But the Raiders line stinks. The Chargers, we just talked about, they had the worst, arguably the worst offensive line of football last year. The Chiefs have a lot of turnover. Anyway, I'm sorry for talking so much, Chris. The Chargers, the Steelers, okay. The Dolphins, the Cowboys, and the Broncos. What stands out here, the Steelers and the Dolphins heavily rumored to be looking at running backs in the NFL draft. What do you make of this?
Yeah, I think one thing, just as a philosophical note, is you should assume that a team that performs this poorly in any given measure will regress to the mean the following year. So you should expect better play from most of these. And, you know, a team like the Dolphins, a team like the Chargers, who have invested so much in their offensive lines, you should expect more improvement than that, although it would be surprising if any of these lines became very good. And I think that all matters for sure for fantasy. You want your running back to be running behind a good line, but you know, it didn't really hold back Myles Gaskin last year when he was starting for the Dolphins. He was a very good fantasy running back. I think in the games he played, he was a top 10 fantasy running back or something like that in PPR. Same for Austin Eckler, obviously. So it's more about how the players are used and how good the offense is as a whole, rather than specifically the offensive lines. But I wouldn't, like, if the Dolphins did grab Najee Harris, I wouldn't discount him because of the line necessarily. I would discount him maybe because we don't know how much of the role he's going to have with Gaskin or stuff like that. But as far as the offensive line, that's for me, at least, it's more of a tiebreaker.
Okay, Heath, what say you? Chargers, Steelers, Dolphins, Cowboys, Broncos, the five worst run blocking offensive lines last year.
I mean, it's obviously a point in the favor of, we hope Ezekiel Elliott bounces back. And maybe last year wasn't Ezekiel Elliott losing all of his skills. Maybe it was just the fact that they are awful at blocking. The Chargers went so interesting to me because their success running the ball was so much different when it was Austin Eckler or even Justin Jackson.
Yeah.
Like Kalen Ballage and Joshua Kelly had 199 carries at 3.2 yards per carry. Austin Eckler and Justin Jackson had 175 carries at 4.6 yards per carry.
Right.
And I just like, I wonder if the I think the Chargers will be better than they were last year. I mostly agree with what Chris said, but I wonder if some of the Chargers' lack of success was Kalen Ballage and Joshua Kelly not doing the thing they were supposed to do and making the offensive line look bad. We talk all the time about how quarterbacks can contribute to sacks more than the offensive line does. I wonder how much of an impact bad running back play has on offensive line grades.
I think the one other thing I would probably try to look at there, if we wanted to like deep dive into this in the future, is, you know, what roles were those guys used in? It can be easy if you're the guy who comes in on a third and nine and gets a draw.
For sure.
To look more efficient than the other guys. I don't know if that's, you know, obviously Austin Ekeler was playing a lot more than that, but, you know, maybe that was the case with Justin Jackson. But yeah, generally, if you're running behind a bad offensive line, you're going to struggle more in obvious run situations than otherwise. I think that's where the biggest impact would be. So, you know, I would want to look into that. But all in all, like, yeah, I think, you know, blocking for Kalen Ballage certainly isn't going to make the offensive line look good.
I think the fact that Ekeler averaged 4.6 yards per carry behind the worst offensive line in football, according run blocking, according to PFF, is pretty cool. The one that really worries me is Pittsburgh, because like the Dolphins are young, and young isn't always a good thing, but it's not a bad thing to think that the three rookies that played last year are going to improve. You can make the same case for the Giants when we talk about them. They have the worst pass blocking offensive line. The Steelers are not. I mean, the Steelers are now turning over. Okay, this is according to Warren Sharp at Sharp Football. He's an analytics expert. This is where the Steelers' run blocking has ranked the last five seasons: 4th, 7th, 12th, 23rd, 31st. They've obviously
just got rid of all those guys. They're not. All the bad guys are gone.
Well, yeah, it's true in a sense, but it's also the cupboard is pretty bare potentially. And this is a team that reportedly is very seems likely to take a running back in the first round. So, you know,
I will say, like, in the Dolphins versus Steelers discussion, I think the one thing that I've heard people talk about, I think Ross Tucker's talked about it, Matt Bitone has talked about it in an offensive line evaluation, is that continuity is very key. And I believe the Dolphins are going to have most of the same guys they played with each other last year, and the Steelers obviously are not. So I would feel much better about the Dolphins improving over last year than I would the Steelers, even though the Steelers got rid of three of the guys that were a problem or part of the problem.
Broncos as well. Broncos will have all four of their starters plus Juwan James, who opted out last year, back next year. All right, let's go to the five.
I would say the same thing for Dallas.
Yeah, Dallas
seems like an obvious regression, you know, positive regression candidate.
Yeah, but I did point this out last time we talked about them, when we talked about Zeke anyway, that Tyron Smith and Zach Martin, they're in their 30s. They're in their 30s. Tyron Smith has missed time, I think, 4 years in a row. So,
I think it's very unlikely they become like a very good offensive line unit again. You know, I'm not expecting them to be the one that, you know, made that the running game, you know, so much more effective. But, you know, like if you go from the fifth worst in the NFL to 12th,
yeah.
You know, you're still not great, but that's still very, very good in terms of what it would mean for Ezekiel Elliott relative to last season.
It's pretty obvious what happened with Dallas.
Yeah.
All right, five worst pass blocking offensive lines according to Pro Football Focus. The Giants, just like the Dolphins, they were starting a lot of rookies. They had a rookie left tackle. At one point, they were using a rookie right tackle and I think a rookie left guard as well. So hopefully they can get better, but they were terrible last year. Also getting Nate Solder back. He opted out. He will be either a starting right tackle or a swing tackle backup. The Jets had the second worst offensive line, pass blocking. And these were the two worst offenses in football, the Giants and the Jets. Mekhi Becton, though, unlike Andrew Thomas, who the Giants left tackle really struggled last year, especially early, got better late. Mekhi Becton had a much better, much more encouraging rookie season and hopefully is a foundational piece on their offensive line. The Chargers were the third worst pass blocking line. The Vikings, and this is concerning because they haven't addressed it and they lost Riley Reiff. They released him. He was, from what I read, he was their best lineman last year. And they haven't, the Vikings have not drafted a lineman in the first round since 2012. So check that out. They have the 14th pick. Maybe they break that trend. And Tennessee, I thought this was interesting. Well, their left tackle, Taylor Lewan, only played five games. Last year, they were dealing with no Jack Conklin, who went to Cleveland in the offseason. But they had the fifth worst pass blocking line. I guess it didn't really matter for them, but they should get better with Taylor Lewan healthy. So Heath, Giants, Jets, Chargers, Vikings, Tennessee. Any thoughts on this?
It's so interesting. Like, the Chargers had a rookie quarterback that had arguably one of the greatest rookie quarterback seasons ever. And they had Austin Eckler, when he was healthy, averaged 4.6 yards per carry. And they had the worst offensive line in football.
Yeah. They ran the most plays in football. That helped.
That does help. Generally, you run plays by picking up first downs and moving down the field.
No, it's a great point. I mean, if their line gets better, whew, sky's the limit.
Are we going to talk ourselves into the 17th consecutive year of the Chargers as the favorite Super Bowl sleeper pick by the media?
I think they're really interesting because they have hired an offensive coordinator who has only one small track record as a coordinator, and it was terrible. And the problem that Joe Lombardi had was that his short area passing game didn't really work well with Matthew Stafford when Joe Lombardi was the Lions offensive coordinator. And last year, Justin Herbert had his worst performances when he was throwing the ball shorter. So I'm nervous about this. And they ran the most plays in the NFL last year. What if they're 10th or something? I don't know, guys. They make me nervous, the Chargers.
What would make me nervous is having a young quarterback that I'm trying to develop and having one of the worst offensive lines in football, or one of the two worst, and not really doing a whole lot to make it that much better.
Well, they did.
Which is the New York teams.
Oh,
I'm talking about the New York teams. So you got Daniel Jones and presumably Zach Wilson. And, like, I don't know that we're going to – I'm not going to be very optimistic about either one of them as long as the offensive lines are this bad.
What about the theory that the Giants will grow into being a good line, basically? And the Giants, by the way, also probably got rid of their best offensive lineman, Kevin Zeitler, who went to the Ravens. But, like I said, rookie left tackle, rookie right tackle last year for part of the season, rookie left guard, you know.
I would say grow into a good offensive line. It's pretty unlikely in 2021. But they, you know, you can expect them to get better.
Hopefully. But again, it's like, that's kind of a meshed situation with the quarterback, right? Like, we're mostly just hoping that he gets better as he gets more mature.
Yeah.
And we're hoping for the same for the line. It's, one of them's going to have to actually be good.
Yeah.
And yeah, by I mean, the look, way, when you're talking about a team like the Giants, who's been, you know, such a bad offense the last couple of seasons, you're going to need a lot of things to go right. You know, it's not just like, oh, the offensive line plays well and all of a sudden this offense is pretty good. It's going to be, you know, a combination of factors. It's going to be the receiving core playing better. It's going to be, you know, Evan Ingram actually catching the ball. It's going to be Daniel Jones not fumbling the ball every three times every game. All these things will need to happen for that offense to get better. And all of them could happen. It's just generally when you're, you know, like you could roll three, you know, ones in a row. It's just, your chances of doing it aren't necessarily all that likely.
And the Jets, by the way, another team. I know this is pass blocking, second worst pass blocking, but another team that could definitely take a running back. As far as the Giants go, if they draft one of the top three wide receivers with the 11th pick, if one of them falls, it would be really annoying because you would put any quarterback in that situation, having Saquon Barkley out of the backfield, having Ingram at tight end, having Galladay, having, let's say, Jalen Waddle, hypothetically, and then Sterling Shepard might be your third best receiver, and then Darius Slayton's not a bad, you know, fourth guy. That's amazing.
Well, I would say not every quarterback.
No,
no, that's what I'm saying. But
you wouldn't say that you'd put Gardner Minshew there.
Well, no, because Denver's got the same situation.
Right, it's true. It's true, yeah.
Except they have a good offensive line.
Yeah, I mean, look, and look how much that helped.
Do they have a good offensive line? I don't know.
You know, like when you're talking about the Chargers in comparison to a lot of these other teams, but I think you could also put the Dolphins there and Steelers. I don't think they were a particularly good offense, but they scored a lot of points. So who knows what I know. You know, the fact that they were good despite, or at least, you know, not terrible despite having bad offensive line is, I think, a better sign, although I think there's room for the Chargers offense to probably regress. I would think this will be an unpopular opinion, but I think Justin Herbert is a possible regression candidate. But yeah, like I think those are the two, you know, and throw the Steelers in there three when you're talking about this group of teams. You should expect the ones that were competent last year with bad offensive line play, you know, potentially there's a lot of room for them to grow. Whereas the Giants, it's harder to see them, you know, still becoming an average offense. Like that would be a big leap.
I don't know that I agree with that, because if you add Saquon Barkley and Kenny Golladay, I think you can be an average offense.
Maybe. It's been a while since either of those two guys has ever been on an average offense, but maybe their powers combined.
Where did they finish? I feel like they were like 17th in scoring 2 years ago. So I'm going to look that up. I just want to tell you guys, don't be too excited if your team drafts a left tackle or a right tackle in the first round. Here's where the first round offensive tackles ranked according to PFF. PFF is... I'm sure they do a better job than I can do, but it's not gospel, right? But Andrew Thomas was the first one selected, fourth overall. He was the 59th rated offensive tackle. Jedrick Wills was 58th. Mekhi Becton for the Jets, he was 31st. Thomas on the Giants, Wills on the Browns. Becton for the Jets, 31st. Tristan Wirfs for the Bucks, he was 8th. That's amazing for a rookie. And Austin Jackson for the Dolphins, he was 75th. The other offensive tackle was Isaiah Wilson for Tennessee. We know about him. Off-field issues, didn't play last year.
Becton was playing through a shoulder injury for most of the season. You know, he had, I think, a separated shoulder in like week 4. So
he had pretty encouraging out there. Pretty encouraging season, I'd say. It was a good good class, Wirfs and Becton, but so far. But then Thomas, Wills, Austin Jackson were 58th, 59th, 75th. So it's not a quick fix. All right, who's ready to find out how many? Where did the Giants rank in 2019 in
Very
scoring?
Important.
19th. They were 19th. So not that bad. That was just Barkley. No Golladay, obviously. No Beckham. Okay, I asked you guys already. I had two random things. One was about the Chargers. We already talked about them enough. So let's go to the second one. Just tell me. You got 1 minute each to discuss. Because Keith, we have to talk dynasty. DeAndre Hopkins, in 31 games in 2017 to 2018, he scored 24 touchdowns. In 31 games in his last two seasons, he has scored 13 touchdowns. Targets are similar enough, 27 more in the first grouping of 2 years. And touchdown passes by his quarterbacks have been 28, 26, 27, and 27 the last four seasons. So how about that? The touchdown rate way down the last 2 years. And when you start to have the conversation, who should be the third wide receiver off the board? He's obviously in that discussion, but probably needs more than 7 touchdowns. So, Heath, what do you think about that? DeAndre Hopkins and his touchdowns.
Yeah, I've got him projected for 8.3. So I think there was a point actually, like, and it was a year or two before it actually happened, where Chris had maybe made the argument that at some point DeAndre Hopkins is going to stop scoring 11 touchdowns every season. And it happened at some point. Like, I think the problem for him now could be that he's on an offense that through 2 years with Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray has not been very good at scoring touchdown passes in terms of a ratio. They are very good at running in the red zone. And Kyler Murray obviously helps with that and is probably better at that right now than he is passing in the end zone. So I don't think you should expect DeAndre Hopkins to, like, it's possible that he will once more, but I don't think you should expect him to bounce back to the 10 to 12 touchdowns per season that he gave you for a while. I think he's going to, but I still have him third, at least in full PPR. Just a lot. He's closer to number 4 and number 5 than he is to number 1 or number 2.
And Chris, you are on the clock.
There's going to be a changing of the guard at wide receiver in fantasy. I presumably this year, certainly within the next two seasons, because you look at, you know, a lot of the guys at the top of the rankings, and for me, it's Adams, Michael Thomas, Stephon Diggs, and DeAndre Hopkins. That's my top four. They're all 27 or 28. I think I think Hopkins is the oldest. He'll turn 29 this season, but then you've also got Allen Robinson's 27 and like 27, 28. That's not so old that what's that?
You said Adams, Hill, Diggs, Hopkins.
Adams, Thomas, Diggs.
Not, Hopkins. Not Tyreek Hill.
Tyreek Hill's fifth. He's okay. Right there.
Okay.
Sorry.
No, it's okay.
Apologies.
No, I just found an error in my Chargers projections that like actually changed everybody. And so I thought maybe there was an error with Tyreek Hill. It was why he wasn't in your top three.
No, I mean, in non-PPR, he's number two.
Okay, perfect.
He's really good.
Didn't mean to interrupt you. I apologize.
Yeah, it's okay. The Chiefs are good. I like the Chiefs.
they're pretty good.
Yeah, like 27 to 28 is not so old that you should be worried about any of these guys, but historically, wide receivers peak between 27 and 28. Those are typically the two peak seasons for wide receivers, and then they fall off.
Why isn't he scoring touchdowns the last 2 years? It's not because of his quarterback play. They've said, like I said, four straight years where the team QB has thrown 26 to 28 touchdown passes. His target share is really high. He didn't get a lot of red zone or green zone targets last year, but still, yeah. The ones he did get, he should have probably scored more touchdowns. So, you know, I'm just saying, like, why can't he have another...
It is a little bit about his quarterback play. Like I know that he scored 10 or 12 touchdowns when his quarterback threw 27. That's the weird thing that happened. If your team scores 27 touchdown passes, you should not expect any player to have double-digit touchdowns.
Okay, but I guess what I'm saying, there wasn't from a passing touchdown perspective, there was not a drop-off going from Watson to Murray last year. That's all I was saying.
No, and I mean, he had... 29% of their targets and only, 21% of their touchdowns. So yeah, there was probably a little bad luck there. And I would say the same thing for the year before. And, the thing about touchdowns is because they're relatively rare events, you're one or two could change the outlook of a player without necessarily changing how well that player played. If DeAndre Hopkins caught 8 touchdowns last season, it wouldn't necessarily have been because he was dramatically better. Even though he would have been a better fantasy player. So I would think, like, I have him projected for 8.8 touchdowns on 168 targets or 166 targets in 17 games. I think that's like 9 touchdowns seems like a pretty reasonable place to set the expectations for him, which is mostly in line with where I have all the other high end wide receivers, except for Tyreek Hill and Devontae Adams are a little higher.
Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to look at dynasty running back and wide receiver tiers and where the rookies are slotting in right now, where they could slot in after the NFL draft. We'll be right back on Fantasy Football Today.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
If you go to cbssports.com/fantasy and you click on football, or you can probably just go to cbssports.com/fantasy/football, there's a Dynasty Central link, and there you can find all of Heath's updated rankings, updated tiers. That's what we're talking about now, the running back and wide receiver tiers. And starting with running back, Heath, these rookies, how are you looking at them now before we know where they land in terms of what tier are putting them in basically and what kind of potential they have?
I think Najee Harris, who I expect to be the first running back taken, will probably slot into either the very end of tier three, which is the same tier that has most of the rookies from last year, or the very top of tier four, which is where you'll find Antonio Gibson and Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Travis Etienne, I expect to be in tier four with Gibson and Helaire. I don't think there's another running back who will be in my top 18 or 19 dynasty running backs from this class. And I mean, it's certainly possible, but it's also kind of a cautionary thing because I would have said that there was no way Clyde Edwards-Helaire would have before the draft last year. And then we all bumped him up to like the number one rookie running back. And now he's back towards the back of the class. So yeah, I think it's those two. And then Javonte Williams is probably tier five and then nobody else in the top five tiers.
And your tiers, it's Christian McCaffrey in his own tier.
And yeah, Chris would probably hate the way that I've got three players in my top two tiers, but
no, that's I think that makes sense. They're given the fungibility of running backs and the attrition rate, the handful of guys who have actually proven they can do it for more than one season. Like you look at who's in the next few tiers, and this is not a criticism at all. This is just the way the position works. There's a lot of guys who have had one good season in the three and four tier. Or there's a lot of guys who, you know, like Clyde Edwards-Helaire hasn't really had one good season. And I don't disagree with where they're ranked. J.K. Dobbins hasn't had one great season yet. That's just the nature of the position. Like, there's a reason there's like three or four guys who every year are at the top of the running back position, and then basically everybody else moves up and down throughout. So I think it makes sense.
I think I would just say that if you were doing your tiers just by yards per carry, J.K. Dobbins would be tier one.
Well, so would Nick Chubb, yeah. And so would Derrick Henry. Like it'd be Dobbins,
I mean,
Gus Edwards would be the leader. Really,
Gus Edwards would be tier one. Henry would have to be tier two or three because you know he's going to lose at least 1 yard per carry this year based on our earlier discussion.
He should have only rushed 1,950 yards.
Yeah, he should have probably sat out week 17. So he should have done what Nick Chubb did,
just fell down.
So true. So is there a rookie running back and team combination that would jump into tier two?
Najee Harris, Falcons.
Falcons, that's the one you want?
Yeah, what's that?
To tier two?
No. Okay. He would just be, like, I don't really feel like any of them belong in tier three, but I could see that's what would put Najee Harris in tier three.
Tier three is a big one with Jonathan Taylor, Swift, Kamara, Aaron Jones, Mixon, Jacobs, Zeke, Miles Sanders, Derrick Henry, J.K. Dobbins, and Cam Akers. Big one there. A lot of concerns in that group, I think. Jacobs, people have to be nervous about. Sanders, Zeke.
Henry's age.
Henry's the oldest one in there by far, right?
Taysom Hill.
Not by far, but he's the oldest one. Taysom Hill for Kamara, right. Yeah. I don't know. I'd rather be in tier one and two than tier three. Hot take.
Well, I said this on FFT and five, Jonathan Taylor and DeAndre Swift might be in tier two, like three games into the season. I just feel like the sample size of when they were so awesome is not quite big enough to put them on that category, but I believe that Jonathan Taylor is going to be there soon.
Kamara is so good. So tier one is McCaffrey. Tier two is Barkley and Cook. Not Kamara? Let's throw Kamara in there.
If you told me that Taysom Hill wasn't going to be allowed to start any more football games for the Saints, I am projecting the Saints right now as if Taysom Hill is going to start 17 games.
Okay. Yeah, because I can't tell you that he's not going to start any.
He's probably going to start lots of them, just at different positions. But I'd like for him to not start any more at quarterback and be responsible for throwing to Alvin Kamara.
All right, how about we take a look at wide receivers?
Kamara would be my number two RB if Winston's starting, and he'd probably fall to like five with Hill.
Him, Aaron Jones, and Zeke, using the way I use age, which is whatever their age will be week one, they are just 1 year away from being the same age as Derrick Henry, who we're wondering if he's almost done. So like if Kamara has 1 year with Taysom Hill as his quarterback, the next year we're discounting him for age.
So wide receiver is more interesting. We're so excited about this wide receiver class. Tier one right now is seven players deep: Adams, Tyreek Hill, AJ Brown, Stephon Diggs, DK Metcalf, Justin Jefferson, and Calvin Ridley. That's tier one. Where will Jamar Chase, Waddle, Smith factor in?
I think probably in tier three, which is where I have CeeDee Lamb, DJ Moore, T. Higgins, and I'm skipping over Keenan Allen, who is actually listed there because of the error that I found during the podcast when Chris called Justin Herbert a regression candidate. And now he's going to need to be a regression candidate. But yeah, I think most likely in that tier three with Lamb. It's possible up to tier two because there's some question marks in that tier as well.
And same question, is there a destination and a wide receiver that makes you jump into tier two?
It's definitely Chase. I'm trying to think of like, because he's going to go. We know that with Harris, it's interesting. There's a possibility that every team gets a chance to draft Harris. Yeah. I don't think that's going to be the case with Chase. So I'm trying to think like with where the teams are drafting, if there's a place that could take Chase. You guys are not helping me out.
No, I mean, so it's Jacksonville, the Jets, then the Niners. They're not going to take him. The Falcons, no, that's not going to help. Well, I mean, look, you don't know how long Julio has, right? That's an interesting, not good for year one, potentially very good long term.
Well, but by the time it's potentially very good long term, who's the quarterback?
Yeah, I get that. But
I wouldn't downgrade him if he was drafted by the Falcons, but I don't think that would be... I don't see the same type of thing that stands out as a fit.
Cincinnati wouldn't do it?
No, I don't think so.
Maybe.
But yeah, you know what? Look, he's going to be better than T. Higgins.
What about...
I think he's going to be better than T. Higgins. T. Higgins is pretty awesome.
Probably not Detroit, was. I would assume. The opportunity.
I don't
would be
mind Detroit. I really don't mind Detroit. I know people hate Jared Goff, and I think it's... not a great quarterback, but he's good enough. And target, you know, he could be a target hog in Detroit. I don't know about in year one, but.
Right. I think that's a possibility.
Philadelphia, if one of them slips?
Philadelphia, I think, would be very, very interesting if Jalen Hurts is good at throwing.
I'm pretty sure Philadelphia is going to get one of them.
Yeah, I think so. I think that would be a little boost because of the big opportunity. I think that the top three guys for sure are better than Rager.
I'm just kind of joking Chargers? About that, by the way, but it sets up nicely for one of the top three to be there at 12.
I wasn't joking about anything.
Yeah, no, I mean, I can't say I'm pretty confident that the Eagles are going to get one of the top three at 12, top three wide receivers, but it kind of makes sense in mock drafts to put a wide receiver, one of those big three, at either 11 or 12. And I don't think the Giants are going to take one.
And I do think that like Waddle is not that far behind Chase, and really Devontae Smith for me is relatively close to that group. That's kind of a tier, that top six that are going to go in the draft, and Chase, Waddle, and Smith are all three in the top tier. It's really interesting with the next group of wide receivers, and you could rank these guys, I think, in just about any order, the second tier, but Rondale Moore, Terrace Marshall, Kadarius Toney, Elijah Moore, Rashad Bateman, those guys will vary wildly based on how, not necessarily where they land, but where they're taken. Because I would guess a couple of those guys are going to be first round picks, and one or two of those guys might fall out of the top 50 picks.
Yeah, and you know, just to follow up on that point, like when you're talking about dynasty values, draft capital is one of the key things that should be determining how your values move forward. Early round picks are going to get more opportunities. It doesn't matter. Hakeem Butler was a guy that a ton of people liked, and he slipped in the draft, and everyone's like, wow, what a steal. And, maybe he breaks out as the Dallas Goedert to Dallas Goedert Zach Ertz. He's in Philadelphia now, right? Still there?
I don't know if he's on the roster.
He got cut. All.
He is a tight end. That's one Butler. Of those things where, like, when a player falls like that, even if you really liked them pre-draft, you should probably be discounting them because the draft capital does matter so much.
It does. I don't know how to, going back to running backs, I don't know how to view it relative to the past at running back anymore. And it'll be interesting. Like if Harris and Etienne both go in the first round this year, then maybe it's not a big change. But we saw some running backs that I think are better than Harris and Etienne fall out of the first round last year. And the Chiefs were the only team that took a running back in the first round. I'm not sure we're going to see running backs really get drafted in the first round anymore.
Yeah. Well, and one other thing,
it's going to take a pretty good running back prospect to be, I guess, a top 20 pick, I would say.
Or a pretty bad decision making.
Yeah, but Barkley would have been, Barkley's probably a top 10 pick in almost any draft. I would guarantee Saquon Barkley, even in hindsight, is a top 15 pick in any draft. I don't know about two, but he was different. It was different. What were you saying, Heath? Or Chris?
Oh, yeah. One thing I wanted
No, Creeth. Creeth, go ahead.
Oh, one thing that I wanted to throw out, when I was talking about age earlier, Calvin Ridley's not quite there, but he is 26, which is always weird to think about because he's heading into his fourth season and he'll be 27 by the end of his, he'll finish his 27 season when he's done with his rookie contract. So he could be someone who, if you're talking about dynasty trades, you know, if maybe next year is the time to start thinking about trading Calvin Ridley because his perceived value will never be higher.
Okay, here we go. Here's what you need to know. I've given this before. You've probably forgotten it. Last 11 drafts, who was the best rookie wide receiver and when was that player selected? You go all the way back to 2010. It's really, I think we should do starting with the Beckham draft. And no, screw it. We'll do all 11. Mike Williams was 15th, the 15th wide receiver drafted. Victor Cruz in 2011 was an undrafted free agent. T.Y. Hilton was the number one rookie wide receiver in 2012. He was a third round pick. He was the 13th wide receiver drafted. However, in full PPR, Justin Blackmon was actually the number one pick. He was the first wide receiver and he was the number one wide receiver. 2013, Keenan Allen, third round pick, eighth receiver off the board. 2014, Odell Beckham, third receiver off the board. 2015, Amari Cooper, first receiver. 2016, Michael Thomas, sixth receiver off the board, second round pick. 2017, Juju, sixth receiver off the board, second round pick. 2018, Ridley, number one receiver drafted. 2019, AJ Brown, fourth receiver drafted. 2020, Justin Jefferson, fifth receiver drafted. So that means it has been since the Beckham year, third, first, sixth, sixth, first, fourth, fifth. That's been the best rookie wide receiver and, you know, where they were drafted among wide receivers. That makes sense. So usually it's right fourth or fifth. It's not often the number one drafted receiver actually finishes number one as a rookie, which is interesting. I think our money's going to be on the top three this year, but you never know. You just never know. Michael Thomas, that was a surprise. Juju, that was a surprise. AJ Brown was obviously a big surprise. And Justin Jefferson crushed everyone. And he was like a 10th round pick or something. So in fantasy.
I think that, you know, at least with Thomas and Juju kind of highlights, like, if you go later in the draft, your chances of being drafted by a good team are higher.
That's true.
You're like a second round pick on a good team, you probably step into a good opportunity with a good quarterback, which might be better for your immediate fantasy opportunity than, you know, stepping into a huge role with a bad quarterback.
All right. That's going to wrap up today's show. And we are going to have more wide receiver talk, a very important episode on Thursday, Emory Hunt to break down his top wide receivers. We'll see how he ranks Chase and Waddle and Devontae Smith, and then who comes right after that. So if you want to hear some previews of that, you can always listen to the FFT and 5 episodes that we recorded with Emory. They're really, really helpful and they'll get you caught up quickly. But tomorrow we'll do a more extensive wide receiver talk and also a little bit of best ball ADP. For those of you who want to do some best ball leagues, we'll get into that. So that's on Thursday, rather, not tomorrow. That's on Thursday's episode of Fantasy Football Today. For Chris and Heath and Ben, I am Adam. Thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you Thursday.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.